Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. Now, I have a new website. It's called simonbowne.com. That's Bowne, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website, and you can go to the new website for past life regression, as well as info about my books and my podcasts. This week, I'm talking to Sharon Kumara about her book, Awakened Soul, My Near-Death Journey Home Through Christ's Infinite Love. Sharon is an intuitive counsellor, psychic medium, spiritual counsellor, past life therapist, and channel, and she works with clients worldwide. Hi, Sharon. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Well, thank you for having me. It's my honor and my pleasure.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Awakened Soul, My Near-Death Journey Home Through Christ's Infinite Love. But before we get into your near-death experience, I wanted to talk to you about your childhood experiences. Was there like a thing where you were really quite psychic? Because I read in your book that you had an incident where you saw your grandfather.
Yes, I was about 8 years old, I believe, around that time when he passed. And my sister and I were living with our grandparents at the time in Mount Angel, Oregon. And he died in the middle of the night while we were in bed. And the next day, or a couple of days after, I'm not sure exactly when, because it was a long time ago, I did see my sister and I slept in the second story bedroom, and I just woke up all of a sudden and saw this person looking in the window from my bed, my standpoint where I was sleeping, and I could see him, and I knew it was my grandfather, and he's looking at me. At least that was my perspective, was that he was looking in the window. And it startled me like crazy. I was also seeing beings in my room at that time, which I remembered later. But seeing him floating in the window was very stark for me at the time. That was something I always brought with me into adulthood. I didn't remember a lot of my childhood. And after my NDE in 2001, which was the bigger catalyst for me, I've actually had two near-death experiences that I remember when I was nine at my grandparents' house. And then in 2001, helped me remember the one when I was nine. But I remembered seeing beings in my room a lot.
And wasn't there also a time, the day your father died, and you were resting on the sofa?
Yes, I was. I was resting. I was taking a nap on the sofa, and he had died that day, and it was in the evening, and I'm not quite asleep. I'm just starting to fall asleep, and I see him walking out of the bedroom into the front room, and he's walking toward me. And I hear him say in my mind, how the hell do I get out of here? And I thought, and my mind was a little confused because I knew that he had died. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's dad had died. And then he's looking past me and he walks right through me. And I had the sense later that he was looking for the tunnel home or something, the light home or something like that. And he probably saw it, behind me.
So you didn't think he was talking to you. It was like he was being rhetorical.
Exactly. That's what I felt. Yes. I mean, I didn't even think about it at the time. I was just in the experience trying to figure out, why am I seeing dad? Yeah.
But also there's a thing of, is it soul rescue? Because it sounded like he was a little lost. He hadn't found the light yet. But did you feel he did quickly find the light?
I did. I felt that because, yes, I did feel he found the light pretty quickly, or where to go. It was interesting that it was later in the day, later in the evening, after he passed that he was looking for how to get out of there. They had taken his body away already at that point. And, working with spirit, we have so many stories about people can stay around their body or stay with family to make sure they're okay, that type of thing, which is actually pretty normal for us. And then when we see that everyone's going to be okay, then we can move across and into the higher planes. It doesn't mean we can't, lower our frequency some way to be with them in a different, but once we're in a different way, but once we realize that we have left, that we have died, so to speak, then we can choose either to stay for a little while or in spirit rescue work, stay for a long time if we're attached to something and we haven't gotten over some emotions that they're keeping us heavy and still on the physical plane. I do feel that maybe he was sticking around for some reason, or maybe he told me earlier that he knew he was dying earlier in the day. So he knew he was dying. He may have been sticking around for a little while.
It's weird, isn't it, when people get to that point where then they're very close to death, and sometimes it seems they can control it. Because I've always thought when we die, we have no control. Your body will just give up. But it seems that sometimes people may hang on where perhaps they're in hospital and they're surrounded by family and they don't want to die where the family is there because it might be too shocking for them. And they're able to hang on until the family's left and then they go by themselves.
Yes, I totally agree, because he did die when we left the room, and so did both my other parents, my biological dad and my mother. They all passed when we had left, when they were alone and we had left the room. My mother was in the hospital, and we were going back the next morning to bring her home on hospice, and she died during the night. And my biological dad, he died that night. We were with him, and so he died when we had left. And I believe that that's what is pretty normal, because like you said, our wanting them to stay, that attachment that we have to the physical vehicle, the physical part of who we are, this is just our vehicle, what we travel around with, is we're attached to that. And so, I do believe that keeps a lot of us here. And so I think it might be helpful if someone isn't in, and we're blessed enough to be with someone when it's time for them to transition, to let them know it's okay to let go.
The time that you were growing up, is it right that you were in a Catholic household? Were they very Catholic?
My grandmother was, and we did spend a few years with our grandmother, and she was very fundamentalist Catholic, but my parents weren't. Neither my biological dad or my stepdad, they weren't very religious. My parents were divorced. They were excommunicated from the Catholic Church, so they didn't feel like they belonged within the Catholic community. But my grandmother was pretty staunch.
And did you follow that religion, or was
No.
it just something your grandmother did?
Well, no, I didn't. Growing up, I didn't. I felt afraid of God's wrath, I guess you could say, the way she explained it. It just didn't sit with me. And, as a kid, I didn't know any better. She would have to chase me around the house to get me to go to church. We went to church, went to a Catholic Catholic school as well. We went to church every day except Saturday, and I didn't want to go. And, you're a kid. And it just felt oppressive when I was in the church for me as a child. And as I got older, it just didn't, the judginess of it. And I'm not saying anything against, I'm not trying to say anything against Catholic religion. There's some amazing people that are Catholics, of course. But the judginess of it didn't feel right with me. It didn't sit right. I felt that there was I believe there was a God. There was an intelligent, much higher intelligence that was looking over me, watching over me, watching over us. I just didn't feel that that it was. He judged everything I did.
And to get ahead of ourselves, I suppose, with your experiences, your near-death experience particularly, you found that you're right, that really there isn't a judgment like the Catholic Church would describe.
Correct. Yes. I did have what I guess we would call a life review in my second one. It was just very different than what a lot of people may share in their NDEs.
Did you have out-of-body experiences when you were younger?
I didn't realize they were, but looking back after I started having conscious out-of-body experiences, I realized that they were. But as a child, I didn't know, because it's natural for us. It is, to be conscious in our dream time and our, nighttime travels. It's we're closer to home as a child, so it's very natural for us to move into the higher planes. I remember flying a lot. I remember what I thought was an eagle picking me up out of bed and taking me on adventures. But looking back on it, that was, I'm sure, some symbolism for maybe someone from the higher planes, a guide, an angel, ancestor, star family being, whoever is taking me to, or I'm just going on adventures.
There was an answer phone message that seemed to come from the dead, and you all confirmed it was the voice.
Yes, the voice of my stepfather. He has a very, very distinctive voice. It's very deep and resonant, and yeah, you can't miss it. You can't mistake it for someone else's. And my mother, that's when we had the answering machines. Back then, before cell phones, the digital answering machines. And she called me one day and said, "You have to hear this." I lived down the street from her at the time. "Says, you have to come over here and hear this." I'm like, "Mom, can't you just tell me on the phone?" Says, "No, you have to come here." So I went and she said, "Play the answering machine." So I played it, and it was my dad's voice distinctly that said my mother's name as clear as day. And I looked at her and said, "That's Dad." And she said, "I know." She said, "I didn't hear the phone ring. There wasn't any messages on it before that. It was the only message on there." And so I called my sister. I said, "I want to play something for you." And I played it. She goes, "Oh my gosh, that's Dad." And I even played it for a friend. She said, and I didn't tell her who it was. I just listened to this. She said, "That's your dad." So. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I was able to communicate with him. That's when my abilities were starting to come to the surface. And he was definitely in the light and a helper for me, still is, and works with me from the other side.
Well, let's talk about the near-death experience you had when you were older, because you didn't remember the one you had when you were age 9 till later, did you?
Correct. Yes.
So how did the near-death experience happen? You were on a bus, weren't you?
Yes. Some girlfriends and I went inner tubing down the Guadalupe River in New Braunfels, Texas, in the U.S. And we were celebrating a friend's birthday. And this is when I lived in Texas. I'm back home in Oregon now. And we had a really good day. And we went to get on the shuttle bus for them to take us back to the outrigger where we could get our cars, because we had rented the inner tubes and brought our ice chest and everything for the trip on the river. It was a little school bus about the size of it was a little school bus, holds 13 max, I believe. And it was pulling a utility trailer. A medium-sized utility trailer that we had all our inner tubes in and our ice chests. And when I got to get on the bus with my group behind us and some other people behind us, the bus was full. And I started to turn around and they're like, no, come on. It's not that far. You can stand in the aisle way. So they packed us on the bus and I went back to the back of the bus and, you know, we were just talking and having fun and stuff. And as the bus driver is shifting through gears, which he was a four on the floor, and he's moving from out of a red light, a green light, he's shifting through gears and we're thrown around in the bus because it's a four on the floor standard transmission. I'm thrown up against the back door, the emergency exit door of the bus, and the back door popped open and I fell out of the bus. At that point, I'm thinking in my head, I can't believe I'm falling out of this bus while he's driving down the road. And I end up, and I remember the bounces. I bounce off the trailer hitch and end up under the trailer. I bounce onto the pavement and I roll on my side. And at that point, I realize that the trailer is going to run over me. And I say and scream in my head as loud as I can, stop, you're killing me. And at that point, the back wheel, the wheel of the trailer runs over my neck and my head. And I pop out through my head, out of my body. And I find myself floating above the scene. And I see my body. I see the bus moving away. He doesn't know that I've fallen out yet. And pulling the trailer. And I see other vehicles driving up to where my body is in the middle of the road. And one is a commuter bus. And I'm thinking to myself, I hope that bus doesn't run over my body because that would be a big mess. But I didn't feel any attachment to my body. I didn't feel any pain or panic or anything. I actually felt acceptance, at peace, but I felt acceptance that I had died and that I knew that this is what we do. And this was just another lifetime where I was finished with this life and I had died. And then I began to think about my friends and how this was going to really ruin their day. We had a really good day. And here I go and die on them. Those were my thoughts in my mind. And it was going to ruin my friend's birthday. And by the way, my friends have not gone inner tubing since then. And so I was thinking about them, but it didn't make me want to come back. And I thought about my partner at the time. And I thought, well, he will be sad, but he'll be fine. He'll get on with his life. And then my sister, who I'm really close to, I knew that she had family. I was thinking about her and I knew that she would be devastated as well. However, she had her family to comfort her and has her family around her. And so I knew that they would be all right. And then I thought about my mom, and who I pretty much took care of at that point. And when I thought about my mom, I felt a presence behind me. My right, I turn around, and it's my stepdad who had died in 98. And I was very happy to see him. And he told me right away that it's not my time. He said, it's not your time. And I felt a little confused. And I told him I want to stay with him. This is telepathic, the communication. And he told me that, it's not your time. And he told me some things that why I needed to go back. And one of them was I needed to help my mom with her transition and what I needed to do with her up till then. And he said, I still had things to do. And we're communicating and I'm trying to talk him into, but I want to stay with you. I feel a presence. I'm sorry, movement to my right again. And I turn and I see that a portal or a tunnel opening. And I am able to recognize and see, I call it the ancestor tunnel. I'm recognize my ancestors within that tunnel, that portal. And I recognized some that I would recognize in this lifetime and some that I wouldn't recognize, but I did recognize then. And I realized that they weren't celebrating my homecoming. And so I thought, because I knew within me that there's a homecoming when we die, when we leave this earth life, this one earth life, because we have many. And so I thought, okay, something's up, definitely. And then I saw another portal start to open up beyond that one. And I can't say if it was in it or outside it. I don't know. They just seemed to merge. And it was as bright as the sun. It was became rather large, and it looked like the sun, brighter, more beautiful. And I see a figure moving out of that portal. And I, as he's moving toward me, I recognize him as Jesus Christ. I recognize him right away. He's wearing the white robe. He has hair down to his shoulders, the beard and everything. And he's illuminated with the light of the sun. And he, as he's moving toward me, he becomes more human-like, like me, physical. And as soon as I recognized him, I flew to him and we embraced. And I just knew that I missed him. I didn't even know that I missed him because he is love. And I knew that I missed him. And again, I didn't even know how badly I missed him. And so as we're embracing, he first thing he says to me is, "It's not your time." And I tell him I want to stay with him, and he chuckles. And says, "I know, but it's not your time." And as we're embraced, he takes his hand, and he lifts my chin to look at in his eyes. I was just holding on to him, and he says, at that point, I see in his eyes that it's hard to describe. I see the universe in his eyes, but also in his embrace and in his eyes, I feel so much love and so much compassion. Just seeing in him, the light in his eyes and how the look on his face and how much he loves me. It was a balm for me. I knew that there wasn't anything I could do that would make him not love me, be upset with me. Anything that I felt guilty about was gone. I felt totally washed clean just with his look and the way he looked at me. And as I'm gazing into his eyes and feeling that, knowing that he is pure love, that I see the universe within his eyes, and that is being reflected back to me, where I know that I am also the universe, and we're gazing at each other through the eyes of the universe, of source, so to speak. And then I feel a warmth, huge warmth in my heart center, and he is sharing light from his heart center and into mine, and I become the light as it envelops me and also is within me. And it was the most joyful, loving, blissful feeling ever. It's not even a feeling. It's just I realize this is who I am, and it's immensely blissful and joyful. And as I'm just in, I am the light. I am in the light. The light is tangible. The light is intelligence. I just know that this is home. And people have asked me how long we were there. And I say, which I totally believe, and I know this to be true, is that I am still there. It wasn't something that I was there and then came, you know, not. I'm still there, if that makes sense. so I heard my name while I'm in the bliss of the light and the love that we are, which brought me back, brought my focus back to my body as my awareness, not my body, but my awareness as Sharon. And I'm back with him. And he asked me if I'd like to go on a journey with him. And I say yes. And he holds out his hand for me to take his hand. And I take his hand. And when I do, we are flying through the cosmos, or the cosmos is moving through us. I don't know which. And I like to share this part because it was very profound for me as well. It's like it was, our senses are so much more heightened and intense in the inner planes, the higher planes. I could feel every line and crevice on his hand. It was extremely intense, just feeling that that his hand, my hand within his. And we're moving through, and we're moving through the cosmos, and I'm seeing lights and colors and planets, I believe. I don't know. We're moving very quickly. And I see a blue, what I believe is a blue star. I believe that stars are portals, blue star. And we get closer and we dive into it. So when I realize it's a portal, and we end up in another space, dark space. And then I see in the distance a planetoid. And we move closer, and I realize that it's a planet, and it's blue-green, and it's a ocean planet. As we move closer, we're hovering above it. And as we're hovering above the ocean planet, I recognize it as a home planet for me, a planet that I enjoy tremendously, having a physical avatar body on this planet, and I enjoy it tremendously. And as we're hovering above, the matrix within my body is being activated and connecting once again with the matrix of the planet, the mother. I felt the mother energy of the planet, matrix of the planet. And I was recognizing and remembering this as, again, as home. And as we were being reconnected, I'm able to move my awareness to the awareness of the planet and her body. The planet is her body, like these bodies are ours. And Mother Earth, of course, is her body. Earth is her body. And I felt so much tremendous love for everything on my body, the beings on my body as the awareness of the mother of the planet. And I can move my awareness from being the planet to down to a single cell amoeba. Any being on the planet, I was able to connect with and feel that same love that the mother had for us, feel the same love for her, for supporting us on her body. And that was very profound for me to reconnect with her. And I thought, you know, we don't love our bodies here at all, a lot of times, enough, definitely. And also the profound love that who we call Gaia, the consciousness of Earth, has for us as well. And we don't, you know, love her maybe as much as we should, for sure, and feel that love from her. So as I was in that space with her, I hear my name again. And Yeshua calls me, or Jesus calls me back, calls me Sharon and calls me back. He said, would you like to move down? And we do, onto the planet and dive in the water. And I'm reunited with a family there. I actually my consciousness actually enters the avatar of my life there. I do feel it's parallel. I don't feel it's past or future. I feel it's parallel. It could be, I mean, we could call it future because it's a higher dimension, but it's actually happening. And since we know that there really is no time, so to speak, I am, the consciousness of Sharon is reunited with the consciousness of that being there. And I'm reunited with my mate. I have a mate. I have children. I have parents. I have a family, and I have community. And it's a very happy reunion. And they know that this part of me is within that avatar. They recognize when I am there in that body, and they're happy to see me, and they welcome me. There's a communication that I'm visiting, so to speak. And so I had to, I wanted to stay. And then I hear Yeshua calling my name again. And again, I don't know how long this consciousness was there. I would go there in my meditations afterwards, which was emotional for me. It was painful to do that. But he calls me and he tells me I can go here anytime during my meditations, and also I can visit. And after my Earth mission is over, that I can return there and bring this part of my consciousness, of my soul, back to that, into that lifetime as well, if I'd like. So it's choice. It's all about choice. And he asked me if I'm ready to return to Earth. And I tell him on one condition, yes, on one condition, that I know that he is with me in a tangible way throughout the rest of my time here, and is walking with me all the time. And I know that he is there. And he said, okay, that's a deal. And then I'm back in my body, in the middle of the road. And I jump up and I run to the side of the road. And my friends jump off the bus and come in and help me. They call an ambulance. An ambulance comes after a little while. And they x-rayed me and did all the medical stuff. And I didn't have, nothing was broken. I didn't have a concussion, although they teased me that I had tire tracks across my head. My hair was falling out. I had road rash. I do have some back damage a little bit, where I have to make sure that it's I do maintenance, to keep it from getting stiff and stuff like that. I hang upside down, which helps a lot, and make sure that it's pliable. And I have scars, but it could have obviously been a lot worse. I do believe that being in the light, with being the light, and where the journey he took me on as well, both helped heal my body.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. Have you ever felt a pull toward a place, a person, or a pattern in your life that you just can't explain? Past life regression can be a deeply healing and insightful experience, helping you explore the stories, emotions, and connections that may be shaping who you are today. Whether you're seeking clarity, emotional release, or a deeper understanding of your soul's journey, a session can open the door to powerful personal insight. To find out more, or to book a session, visit simonbaum.com. Hello, Simon here. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you came out of that, it went over your head, but it was miraculous that you weren't much more injured, isn't it?
That's what I believe. What happened was that the light healed my body. And the him taking me into the higher dimensions healed my body, because I brought that light back with me. My consciousness brought it back with me and infused it into my body. And I believe that's what happened.
I got to ask this question. How do you know it was really Jesus? Could it have been some spiritual being that was just presenting themselves to you like that?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I recognized him. It wasn't, I believe that we recognize soul. Everyone has a frequency. They're a frequency that they put out. It's, and I know that I've known him in that lifetime as well, when he walked the planet. I remember that later, but, or he helped me remember that. Yeah, all I know is that he was love, and I recognized him. He appeared to me as I would recognize him as Christ. And that's who I recognized. I already knew him. I knew him. It wasn't like somebody put on a costume, you know? Yeah. I recognized his essence. I recognized who he is. And he has, I mean, all of us are God within. We're all love. And so he is able to carry the frequency of the Most High. And that's how he appeared to me. And I recognize the form that he took when he walked the planet as Christ, as Jesus, as Yeshua. And so I just trust my heart, my gut, my intuition. And I knew it was him. There was no doubt in my mind, or my heart, especially.
So how does he fit in with religion, like particularly Catholicism? The way Catholicism describes him, would you say that he fits that perfectly, or he's something completely different?
Oh, he's completely different. He doesn't fit in at all. You know, the New Testament does depict him as a loving being, definitely, and that's who he is. And he's here to help us, and to help us remember who and what we are, which is love. And as far as religion goes, the Christ I know, the Yeshua, the Jesus I know. And a lot of people know as this funny, loving being is not anything like this serious person that that the Catholic Church teaches. I know him as he is someone who walked the planet as a human. And also had obviously challenges. He was crucified, but you know, he tells us that he's not a lot different. Than, you know, we are, and he's a teacher for us. And he's, I believe, the greatest teacher and master that ever walked the planet. And we've had a lot of masters and teachers walk the planet for sure. Doesn't mean that anyone's any better than any, but I do believe that he was the greatest teacher to walk the planet. And I feel like religion doesn't do him justice, do his teachings, not him personally, because that's not what he's about. What he's about is the teachings. His teachings, they're metaphysical teachings. And they were, that's why he was crucified, because the clergy, you know, the old ways were threatened by his teachings, because he was teaching us how to love each other, love your enemy, you know, things like that. And that all of this is our own making, and it's an illusion, and we are all no different. And he even says, in the Bible, hopefully this is a good quote. I'm sure I know it is with how I work with him. That these things I do, to paraphrase, these things I do, you can do and more. So he's telling us that we are all the same.
So there's a couple of things in the book I wanted to ask you about relating to this near-death experience. And one of them is you said, I knew I had died and also knew that I had died many times before. So was that just that, or was there more detail in that? Like, did you see past lives?
I did. And I, like I say in the book, I remember my near-death experience in increments afterwards. It was way too much for my psyche to handle all at once. And so my higher self, Christ or merciful, God is merciful, whatever we want to call infinite intelligence, the source. And so I was able to remember in increments. And I did remember many, many past lives, and he helped me with it. And the only way I was able to remember everything is by committing to be in meditation with him every night at 9 p.m., which I did without fail. And so my childhood memories came to the surface. My past lives, I don't know if they're all of them. I don't believe I remembered all of them in complete detail, but I did remember a lot of my lifetimes, especially the ones he wanted me to dive into that where I was holding trauma and that part of my soul was fragmented. So he's helping me with that type of work, bringing in pivotal lifetimes for myself where that part of me was stuck like a ghost, you could say. Soul retrieval type of work. He's the one who taught me soul retrieval type of work, which is ironic, isn't it? But So I was able to heal with him and remember lots and lots of lifetimes all the way back to the Galactic Wars millennia, you know, as a Pleiadian soldier, a female Pleiadian soldier. And from when my soul was remembering when we left the Lyran star system for this galaxy. And so it was a lot that was coming up to the surface.
During your NDE, you didn't want to come back, but when you agreed, you stipulated that he had to agree to meet with you and to allow you to remember him. When you were doing that, was it like a negotiation? You know, was it almost you're having a laugh when you're doing it, or did you take it quite seriously?
Well, I was serious, but he knows us, and he knew that it was going to happen anyway. He knows my life plan, so it was basically like, of course, that's what we're going to do, because this is the work you're returning to do. So it was kind of a catch 22 where he already knew what was happening. I needed to do this work with him in order to wake my soul up. And that's why my book is called Awakened Soul. And because I was a partier, you know, the only thing that I was doing basically was working. I held down a job and I partied, and it wasn't anything that I was going down a path that I should, you know, that I needed to, I needed an intervention. I believe NDEs are interventions, really, is what they are. And so he knew that I needed something to put me back on my trajectory where I needed to be. And so he already knew that, and it wasn't anything that was serious for him. Meaning he knew I'd be back. He knew that I would agree to come back. So for me, it was like, okay, but on one condition, I know that you're with me, because being with him is, you're home. And I didn't feel at home, like I was home, with the life I was living. I mean, you know, it was an earth life where I did a lot of things, but it wasn't the love that we are. I didn't feel that in my experience up till then. And so I needed to have that back. I needed it here on earth.
So when was the last time that you had communication with him?
I talk to him all the time. All the time. He's with me all the time. It's not where he's not. There's no time when he's not with me and I'm not talking to him.
I'm not going to ask you to do it, but if you wanted to, could you like ask him a question right now or talk to him?
Sure.
I don't want to hassle you with that and ask you to do it. I was just wondering, is it okay if we talk about your near-death experience when you were age 9 and how it came about?
Sure. How I remembered it was I was in meditation with him, and this memory came to me. My childhood memories were coming up like crazy, and they were painful. I realized why I didn't remember a lot of my childhood. Is there was abuse involved from an extended family member, not my immediate family, and others, but the one, the main culprit. And so I remembered when I was in the backyard of my grandmother's house, and she had a little grapevine orchard. And I was back there looking for agates, rocks, when we used to find them. And this person was there. And he would come to visit once in a while, and he was there. He grabbed me and started to abuse and hurt me and beat me up, type of thing. He basically wanted to kill me. And one blow, it was just one blow underneath my ribs that knocked me completely out of my body. I couldn't breathe. It knocked me completely out of my body. And I was not in the light. I was in darkness. I felt complete peace. I had pain for half a second. And I felt complete peace. And I was floating in this darkness, this supportive darkness. It wasn't a scary darkness. It was supportive. And it felt, just felt like, I realize now that what I've heard other philosophies call it, the primordial mother, perhaps, like being in the womb. It felt like that. And I felt very supported and at peace. It's different from the light. I mean, they're both a home for us, but it's different. I didn't feel that total. I didn't feel like I lacked bliss or lacked love or anything like that. It just felt completely supported. And there was a sound or a tone, music that's hard to describe. It was a frequency that held me there. And as I floated in that space, I felt, I knew that anything that was out of balance within me was being rectified or healed, because this space is all about balance. Nothing can be out of balance in this space. It's not possible. So I'm just floating, enjoying that. And to my right again, I notice a light, and it's a portal opening like the sun again, and it's a portal. And I see who I recognize as Jesus moving out of that portal. And he looks the same. He's wearing a robe, the dark hair, and he comes to me. He writes me, and he's crouched down next to me, and he holds me, and he says, you don't have to return my child. You've suffered enough. And I tell him that I do want to go back because I haven't finished what I was on earth to do in this lifetime. I hadn't finished my mission, so to speak. And I knew this. And he asked me, are you sure? And I say, yes, I'm sure. And then I'm back. I'm back in my body. There's not a lot. I was just going to say, there's not a lot I remember about that NDE other than that. It was not very different than the one in 2001, I'll tell you that. But he was there both times.
Do you feel that when making that decision about whether you were going to come back, it was like you weren't a 9-year-old anymore and it was an adult point of view?
Yes, it was. It was my soul. My soul knew I had access to my soul, or I was my soul, so to speak. And I was not the 9-year-old at that point that would be terrified of coming back, you know, in that space of terror. Yeah.
There's something in that you write about in the book. It's quite a short story, but it's about you were shown you were on an aircraft and there was a man next to you and he dissolved into dust. Can you explain why you were shown that?
Well, what I heard was that was the old way. When I was on the airplane, I was flying from San Antonio to Oregon when my biological dad was dying. And so I was going to be with him, my sister. And the gentleman next to me, we started talking. I was reading a book called The Ascension Handbook by Joshua Stone at that time. And it had a lot of ascended masters on the cover. And Jesus was one of them. And he asked me what the book was about. And I told him, you know, because I was just starting to read it. It was during the time where I was just starting to hear about ascended masters and the afterlife and things like that, and the higher planes. And so I told him a little bit about it, and we talked and said, okay, well, you know, how are you traveling or where are you traveling to and why, kind of thing. And I told him that I was going to Oregon to be with my dad, who was dying. And he asked me if he had accepted Jesus into his heart. And my dad, being raised by my grandmother, who was very staunch Catholic, was against religion. However, he was a very down-to-earth, good man. He'd give anyone the shirt off his back. But he wasn't religious at all. And so he actually didn't talk very good about the Catholic Church at all. And so I told him, I said, well, my dad's a good man. And I believe, cause he said he's not going to get to heaven unless he has. That was the conversation. And I said, well, my dad's a good man, so I'm not worried about it. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. Oh, I know what he said. Well, good isn't going to get it. And I thought, well, I don't know about that. But anyway, we ended the conversation. I went back to my book. And as I was sitting there, it was like my astral head, not my physical head, but my energy head turned and looked at the man. And I saw him turn into a skeleton and then turn into dust and disintegrate. Just as clear as day. And I heard Christ, who's my guide, say to me, that is the old way. And I realized that it was judgmental for this man to judge my dad based on the fact that he, you know, didn't accept Jesus into its heart, which to me means have a loving heart, because that's what Jesus is all about. And so that was the meaning that I got from that.
It's been great talking to you. The book's called Awaken Soul, My Near-Death Journey Home Through Christ's Infinite Love. And can you tell us where people can get that?
Of course. Well, it's on Amazon. And if people prefer audio, it's on Google Play Books on audio. I have paperback and hardcover and Kindle on Amazon. And they can also go to my website and find it there too. I was just going to say my website is SharonSananda.com.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. It's been my pleasure. Great to speak to you.
This week, I was talking to Sharon Kumara about her book, Awakened Soul, My Near-Death Journey Home Through Christ's Infinite Love. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you get access to the extended episodes. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.